That's right. The residents of the area lodged an objection because of the smell. It's been pending for ages, apparently.
Gary scratched his head.
Well, it's only just come back to me. What used to be on that land?
Rosie frowned.
It wasn't a house, was it? It was a riding stable. And it went bankrupt. How does that fit in? I've been trying to remember what was there before. There was a big old house on the adjoining plot of land. It's long gone. But it was called Alderfield.
Marie stiffened and looked across to Jackman. The name was horribly familiar. Gary continued, his voice hollow.
Alderfield was the home of Simeon and Charlotte Mulberry. Simeon killed his wife, then shot himself in front of his children.
Silence filled the big room. Marie's brain danced with confusing thoughts and suppositions. Suddenly Jackman found his voice.
Were you on that investigation, Gary?
Not exactly, boss. I was at Harlan Marsh when it occurred, but it was such a sensitive case that most of us lower ranks were kept in the dark about the full details.
We're going to have to uncover every damn thing we can about that case, especially where that young girl fits in.
Jackman looked at Gary. Do you know anyone who'd help us? Anyone who was involved in the original inquiry?
Maybe. Although whether he'll talk is another matter.
Gary bit his lip.
It was a bad business, sir. Harlan Marsh dealt with it, well, as far as they were allowed to. Then one evening a special unit arrived and everything was spirited away. They took evidence boxes, reports, statements, everything, including the DI that was heading up the inquiry. It was moved elsewhere overnight, and a month later, it was like it had never happened.
Why?
Asked Jackman.
We never asked, boss. It was made very clear at the time that it was better for us to let it lie, he shrugged. We knew they weren't messing around when the DI, the only man to ask questions, found he'd been posted a very long way away.
Do you know where he is now?
He retired years ago, but he came back to this area last autumn. He lives at Fosdyke, got a little place on the River Towpath.
What made it so sensitive?
Asked Max.
The children, Max. They saw Simeon blast their mother across the room, then do the same to himself. It was done to protect the children.
Rosie frowned.
Surely there had to be more to it than that. Evidence and investigating officers don't usually get spirited away unless there's either an in-house investigation or someone's really blundered.
Maybe we'd better ask your old colleague, Gary. What's his name?
Duncan Hewitt, sir.
Gary ran a hand through his hair.
But don't hang by your eyelashes. That case was bad news for D.I. Hewitt. And last I heard, he was still bitter as aloes about it.
Marie began collecting the leftover pizza boxes and throwing them in the bin.
If we are to find out if Fleur was connected to the Mulberry family and Alderfield, we are going to have to get him to talk to us, aren't we?
Tomorrow, Jackman said. We've done enough today. We'll go and see him in the morning.
After we've sorted out interviews with Asher Layton, Benedict Broom, and Micah Lee, if he's not still away with the fairies.
Can I make a suggestion, sir?
Gary asked Jackman.
It might be a good idea not to mention anything about Alderfield, the Mulberry deaths, or ex-DI Hewitt to Superintendent Crook just yet.
Jackman's eyes narrowed.
Don't worry. I wasn't going to. Explaining the simple stuff is hard enough. But telling her that we are sniffing around a closed and highly controversial case, despite what people may tell you, I really don't have a death wish.
Chapter 30 A green-gold sunrise lit the fields with a warm glow. Jackman had decided to send Gary and Marie to talk to the retired policeman. Gary, because he had a kind face that the man would recognize, and Marie was a damn good, honest detective. Hopefully Hewitt would recognize that. They left her car in a small parking area just off the A17, and continued on foot down the towpath. The River Welland was wide and fast flowing at this point. Years ago there had been rickety old wooden moorings along the bank, but they had been taken down since Marie had last walked this way.
"I used to love walking the dog here when my dad was alive," she said softly.
"Better way than usual to start the day," said Gary, swatting at a small fly. "I assume the interviews threw up nothing."
"Asher Layton is staying silent. Micah Lee has been arrested for assaulting me. He's been seen by the doctor. Although he's calmer now, we decided to give him a little longer before interviewing him."
Marie touched her bruised face.
"And Benedict Broom? Well, I'm not sure about Benedict. He was very upset when he heard that Micah had attacked me, but he seemed even more disturbed by the fact that his housekeeper was being questioned."
"Do you think Broom is connected to the drinking club, Sarge?"
Marie kicked at a stone.
"I can't see it."
Gary watched a cormorant fly slowly downriver, throwing a dark shadow onto the greenish water.
"My mate at Harlan Marsh said that Cade has been busy with other matters. It seems that his enthusiasm to help you out has waned."
He gave a little snort.
"He was pretty pissed off to hear that Jim Salmon had tried to interview Micah Lee, but interestingly enough, he let it go when he learned that Salmon had got nothing from the man."
"Surprise, surprise."
Marie looked along the path to where a small cottage sat between two big rectangular fields.
"Is that it?"
Gary nodded.
"Now we just need to get him to talk."
Duncan Hewitt opened the door, and Marie knew instantly that she was going to need every ounce of persuasiveness that she could muster. Hewitt was tall, a little overweight, and the red across his nose suggested that he liked his drink. He had retained a full head of hair, and he wore outdoor clothes. Dark green cargo trousers, a checked shirt, and a worn khaki gilet checkered with bulging pockets. He made it quite clear that they weren't welcome. At first, Marie wasn't certain how to tackle him. If she was too nice, he would think her patronizing, and she was also certain that if she mirrored his belligerent attitude, he'd slam the door in their faces. She finally decided on a detective-to-detective approach, throwing him enough tempting little tasters to make his natural copper's curiosity kick in. And somehow it worked. 10 minutes later, she and Gary were sitting in cane armchairs and sipping strong tea in a neat little hexagonal conservatory.
"I swore I'd never talk about it again," said Hewitt. "But," he gave a gruff sigh, "damn memories never leave me be, so what the hell?"
"Our own case is harrowing," said Marie with feeling. "A body count of 13 young women."
Duncan Hewitt whistled through his front teeth.
"That is bad. So, what can I tell you?"
"What really happened in Alderfield, sir?"
Gary spoke softly. Hewitt gave a snort.
"I'd love to know."
He placed his mug on the cane table and sat back.
"I'll tell you what we saw, and what I suspect, and what you do with the information is up to you. Except,"
and he stared at Marie,
"it never came from me. Is that understood?"
Marie and Gary nodded.
"Alderfield was a good-sized country house, with quite a few acres of land. When we got the call, we weren't sure what we'd find because it was one of the children who dialed 999.
Hewitt swallowed.
"We found Simeon Mulberry in the entrance hall, a double-barreled shotgun beside him. His wife, Charlotte, was lying at the bottom of the stairs. They had been shot in the head. The gun had discharged both barrels, and two shell cases were found close by."
"And the children?"
asked Marie, not sure if she really wanted to hear the answer.
"They were all there, silent as the grave, white faces and terror in their eyes. Some had blood on them."
Hewitt looked into the distance, as if he were back in that old house, seeing it all afresh.
"It freaked us out, Sergeant Evans. Totally freaked us out."
"How many were there?"
6 children. 5 boys and a girl. The eldest was in their late teens, and the youngest little more than a toddler."
So does anyone know what caused Simeon to snap and murder his wife?
Maybe I should tell you about that man before we go on.
Hewitt's eyes darkened.
To the outside world, Simeon Mulberry was an astute businessman with the Midas touch, and he was clever enough to make friends with a lot of important people. But in truth, he was a perverted sadist who hid his vile activities behind an elaborate facade.
Hewitt stared at them.
Simeon was the most evil man I have ever had the misfortune to meet.
You actually met him?
Gary sounded shocked.
Oh, yes, at some of the formal functions we had to attend as part of the job. He was handsome as a movie star, and could charm the birds from the trees. But he had a heart as dark and cold as a frozen cesspit. I'm just sorry that he never came to court, or went to prison, because in prison he would have been justly punished for his actions. The other inmates would have seen to that.
Marie suddenly had a vision of blood-spattered children.
What kind of sadist?
Hewitt's face was full of disgust.
The worst kind. Beneath the house was a basement room with bars at the small high windows and locks on the door that would have withstood a mad bull. We found a row of purpose-built cages, Sergeant.
Marie felt sick. This was like listening to a synopsis of some ghastly horror film. But Hewitt had more to say.
The children themselves never spoke about the abuse that they suffered, but their scarred bodies said it all. At the hands of their own father, they had suffered every kind of mistreatment in the book. It was hard to assess the depth of their trauma. On the surface, they were remarkably well-adjusted and very intelligent, with the exception of one boy, who had sustained a head injury in early childhood, probably at his father's hand.
"What happened to them?" asked Gary.
"We were never told anything."
"They were taken away and protected for a time, then given new identities and new lives. I'm told that they had psychiatric monitoring and support for years, but eventually they went on to lead their own lives."
Marie stared out of the window, across the acres of farmland. This was not the end of it. Duncan Hewitt gave her a knowing smile.
"You're waiting for the next installment?"
Marie nodded. "You should never have been railroaded out of the county just for doing your job. So it makes me think it has something to do with all those important people that you mentioned. The ones that Simeon cultivated."
"Well done, well done. Oh, yes. There were politicians, councillors, barristers, financiers, and policemen. Simeon had sucked them all in. And exposing him as a monster would have been horribly embarrassing and very dangerous for some people in important positions."
His voice was bitter.
"I have to say, the cover-up was a masterpiece of skillful manoeuvring. I believed then, and I still do, that I was close to uncovering a connection between Simeon Mulberry and one of our own top brass."
He looked at Marie grimly.
"There was something rotten within our ranks, and my keen nose was getting a little too close to the source of the stink."
Hewitt pulled a face.
"So I was got rid of. But that was not the whole reason. I was the only one to voice an opinion to my commanding officer that Simeon's suicide was nothing of the sort. He was helped, as sure as we are sitting here."
"Helped?"
Marie's eyes widened. Hewitt looked tired.
"You know what a copper's instincts are like, Sergeant Evans. You get a feel for something. And there was something not right when we walked into Alderfield that day."
He heaved a sigh.
"Not that I could ever prove it, but everything was wrong. The bodies, the children, the gun. It was all there, just as you'd expect, but..."
He gave a shrug.
"I wasn't the only one to think this. I was just the only one stupid enough to say it.
Say what? Asked Gary slowly.
Some of us believe that the children, having witnessed their mother's death, might have been instrumental in killing their father.
The children?
Marie felt slightly dizzy.
Who else?
And could you blame them?
That monster had 6 children and he abused every single one of them.
Duncan suddenly stood up.
I've got something, if you'd like it. I call it my memory box.
In the sunny conservatory, Marie felt a chill seep through her body. She hadn't imagined this. Worse still, she had no idea what any of it meant in relation to Fleur, or to the deaths at Windrush. Lost in thought, she hardly noticed Hewitt return. He handed her a large cardboard box.
There you are. It's all yours, Sergeant. My diaries, my notes, a few illicit mementos. All those interesting little things I just couldn't throw away.
He drew in a long breath.
I hope they help you, but be warned, they do not make good bedtime reading. Oh, and I don't want them back. I was going to burn them, and if you don't take them, I still will.
He looked at her solemnly.
And I'd rather you didn't come back. Because with that box gone, I intend to put the Marlboroughs behind me. Forever.
Clutching the box, Marie stood up.
The senior police officer involved with Mulberry, who was he?
Hewitt swung the door open.
I value the few years of life that I still have left to me. And as his seed still flourishes within this fertile land, I won't be sharing that information. Goodbye, Detective Sergeant Marie Evans, and good luck.
Jackman called the team together in his office, and Marie told them what Hewitt had said. None of them spoke immediately. Then Rosie said,
James Cade comes from a family of police officers, doesn't he?
Maybe that's not an avenue we should be pursuing. Let's work on what's at hand. That can wait until the time is right.
Jackman sounded serious. Now, forensics stated that Fleur had been terribly abused, and because of the close proximity of the disused graveyard at Alderfield, one would assume that she was the Mulberry girl. Gary flipped through D.I. Hewitt's notebook.
But that's not possible. The only girl was taken into care, and her age is wrong. What were their names?
Asked Rosie.
Gary shook his head. We only knew of them as Child 1, Child 2, etc.,
unless Duncan knew differently. He took another notepad from the box and opened it.
I can find out, said Max eagerly. Can I use your computer, sir?
Jackman stood up.
Help yourself.
Max dropped into Jackman's chair, and they all watched his fingers fly across the keyboard.
Weird.
He glared at the screen and typed in more commands. After a few moments, he grunted.
This isn't right, boss. Access denied? On a simple birth registration? Why?
Because I fear we have wandered into dangerous territory.
Max, close the computer down.
Where the Mulberry case is concerned, I think we need to be canny from now on.
No problem, sir. There are other ways. Now I know to tread carefully.
Gary looked at Max with interest.
That sounds promising.
Max grinned.
I love a challenge. His hacking skills are legendary,
added Rosie. But don't tell a soul, or he's stuffed as far as his job is concerned.
I always knew this team was different, said Gary. In fact, there was a loud knock.
D.I. Jackman? Clive leaned around the door. His words tumbled out.
Sir, the duty sergeant says, could you go downstairs immediately? Someone has just come in and he says he's responsible for the findings beneath Windrush.
Jackman and Marie went immediately to the custody sergeant, who told them that the man had been cautioned and arrested, and they could see him as soon as they wanted. Jackman paused for a second before entering the interview room. He turned to Marie and said,
Watch him carefully. See what you can pick up from his body language.
Marie nodded. She opened the door and they went inside the gloomy room. Jackman made the introductions for the tape. Philip Groves was dressed in neat, casual country clothes.
"I would have come sooner," he said. "Only I had to make arrangements for my animals. I know I won't be going home again."
His voice was soft and cultured. "Mr. Groves, you have stated that you are responsible for... for what, exactly?"
"The children's ward is mine."
Jackman swallowed hard. Other than the police and forensics, no one had been informed of what lay beneath Windrush. He asked Groves to tell them what he knew about it.
"It lies beneath the ground and is approached from an old Victorian tunnel from the marsh. There was no one else out on the fen at night, as I told your detectives, and I'm sorry I lied to them. I was the one out there."
Jackman looked at Philip Groves and tried to find out one thing that told him he was sitting opposite a ruthless killer. There was nothing.
"I took the girls along the passage on a trolley, then into the ward, and so to bed."
Jackman saw the confusion on Marie's face. Did you sing as you went?"
"Sometimes. I prepared the place years ago. Windrush was empty for some time before it was won in that wager. I used to wander around there a lot. That was when I found the tunnel from the house, and I found all those old beds and lockers, too. They were ready to be dumped, so I took them down the tunnel and set up the ward. Sadly, I had to seal it up when it was finished, in case the new owner stumbled across it."
Jackman glanced at Marie. Groves knew far too much. So why did he not feel elated at this confession? The murderer had just walked in through the front doors and practically prostrated himself before them.
"We need to take your fingerprints, Mr. Groves, and a sample of DNA, if you agree."
"I have no objection."
"You also have the right to a solicitor. You can either request your own, or we can get the duty solicitor."
Groves stared down at the table.
"I don't need one, Detective Inspector."
"It's your choice, sir, but I really would advise it."
Jackman looked at Groves, and although he still could not see the murderer, he could see the man who had placed those vases of flowers beside the beds.
"What was on the bedside lockers, Mr. Groves?" he asked casually.
Groves gave a little sigh and looked at Jackman with the saddest of grey eyes.
"I know what you are talking about. Yes, I took them fresh flowers. Check my garden, Detective. The plants will match the ones in the little vases."
"One last question. The first victim. Her name was Fleur. What can you tell us about her?"
Philip Groves sat a little straighter in his chair.
"I'm sorry, but I don't wish to say any more."
Chapter 31
No. This isn't right.
Jackman paced his office. Professor Henry O'Byrne followed him with his eyes.
"But what about his statement? It's utterly damning."
Jackman knew that, but still the alarm bells jangled in his head.
He knew all about the underground chamber, yes. He'd obviously been in it, yes. I can't argue with that because his prints matched the ones that Rory found.
But Philip Groves never drugged, assaulted, and brutally murdered those girls. He's protecting someone.
"Maybe.
Or maybe your young detective's theory of a multiple personality is right, and he's protecting his other self." The professor scratched his head.
"At least he's agreed to let me sit in on the next interview. Maybe I can shed a little light on this."
Marie leaned against the wall, apparently lost in thought. Then she said,
"Jan Wallace, the forensic archaeologist, said that whoever placed Fleur's skeleton on that hospital bed had an expert knowledge of anatomy."
"Like a veterinary surgeon," Henry O'Byrne murmured.
"Exactly. like a vet.
Jackman threw up his hands. Maybe it was him, but it doesn't mean he killed her.
He resumed his pacing.
Could Groves have killed them?
The question wove itself around his mind like a cat's cradle.
You're thinking that a man who heals tiny kittens and sick puppies couldn't kill, aren't you?
Said the professor. Maybe.
Just remember that he also sticks needles full of lethal drugs into them and watches them die.
The professor's eyes never left Jackman.
He slides cold steel beneath their soft furry skin and sees their warm blood flow.
Don't underestimate Philip Groves, D.I. Jackman. It might be a big mistake.
Jackman heaved a loud sigh.
I know. I just wish I could get my head round all this. And I still believe that Fleur is the key. If only we could identify her.
I totally agree, said Marie, leaning over Jackman's desk and taking a sheet of blank paper from his printer tray.
She pulled a pen from her pocket and wrote Fleur's name in the centre of the paper.
Brainstorming, said the professor. Good idea.
I was just thinking about direct connections.
Marie drew an arrow from Fleur to the name Elizabeth Sewell.
She said Rosie reminded her of Fleur.
Marie wrote the name Philip Groves and connected him to both Fleur and Elizabeth. The name Benedict Broom followed, then Micah Lee, and then Toby Tanner and Asher Layton. Soon the paper was full of names and interconnecting lines.
And this is helpful?
Asked Jackman acidly. Marie pushed the paper away from her.
Probably not. I'm going to find Max and Rosie, see if they've had any luck.
As Marie left, the psychologist pulled the scribbled sheet towards him and slowly ran his finger over the maze of lines.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave,
he tilted his head.
I wonder what Sir Walter Scott would have made of this little tangle.
None of them, yet all of them, woven together. Max was using his own laptop for his unauthorized excursion into restricted territory. A constant stream of numbers, codes, and letters flashed up and disappeared on his screen. Every now and again, he looked over to where Rosie sat working. He wished this horrible case was over, because the more he saw of Rosie McKeldry, the more he understood where his feelings were heading. But right now, he had serious work to do. Rosie called across to Marie.
That was forensic, Sarge. The hanged man is Toby Tanner. The fingerprints are an exact match. They've done DNA testing too, and there's no doubt. And that's not all. As soon as they ran the prints, they hit another match, lifted from the nasty party in Fendyke Chapel.
Her voice dropped to a whisper.
Respected gentleman farmer Toby Tanner has been slumming it with Cade and his pervy friends.
Max punched the air and grinned at Rosie.
So we were right. He was connected to the parties.
Rosie grinned back.
That's probably why he topped himself.
Did Asher Layton's prints show up too? Asked Marie.
No, just Tanner's. So maybe Asher didn't go to the chapel that night.
Marie was just about to reply when Max looked at his screen.
Sarge?
I've done it. Look.
He waved a printout at her.
You are so not going to believe this.
Marie took the sheet from him, and passing over the restricted header, read down the list of names and dates.
What? Jesus. The boss needs to see this. Come on, you two.
Marie's voice crackled with excitement.
The Mulberry children were called. Wait for it. Benedict, Tobias, Micah, Philip, Elizabeth, and Asher.
She handed Jackman the report.
They were all given new families and new lives, but for some reason, they all came back here.
Because they had to, the psychologist said softly.
Those poor fledglings had to return to the nest to find somewhere where they could be together again.
They had no choice.
Despite the good intentions of the social workers and the courts, they had to find each other again, like moths drawn to a flame.
Jackman exhaled.
We need to talk to Benedict. No wonder he was so worried about Elizabeth. She's his sister.
And Asher?
Rosie looked aghast.
It was his brother that he found hanging in the old mill. That explains why he's in such a state.
And of course he had a key to the farmhouse, added Marie,
because his two brothers lived there. I'm betting he went there to see if there was anything in Toby's home that might link them to the Mulberry family.
Siblings. All of them,
whispered Jackman.
He looked at the psychologist. Just how damaged could this family be? I mean, looking at Benedict and Philip, they seem to have integrated perfectly into society. One is in finance, and the other is a respected veterinary surgeon.
The professor shrugged. Irrelevant. They will all be damaged by what happened to them. Some more than others, but I guarantee that not one of them is normal. I would be willing to stake a large amount of money on the fact that every single one of Simeon Mulberry's children has been traumatized and affected in some manner.
He leaned back in his chair.
You know that the abused can become the abuser. In your job, you've seen it 1,000 times.
Jackman had. One of them, Asher, has a strong sexual compulsion. Is that the sort of thing you mean?
Absolutely.
And depending on his mindset, the opportunities open to him, and the extent of the original damage, that sort of thing can escalate over time.
To rape.
Usually to sexual harassment, then rape, and finally even to murder.
Jackman rubbed his eyes.
Hearing that makes me wonder if the children's ward is some kind of twisted family business.
He looked around.
Where is Max?
Marie looked out the door.
He's still on his computer.
She called across to him. Max, is there more?
Give me 1 minute, Sarge.
Everyone was silent. Henry O'Byrne picked up Marie's graffiti-covered sheet of paper and waved it.
Tangled webs and deception. It was all here.
Except for Fleur.
Rosie's voice was somber.
Maybe not Flower.
Max walked in and handed Jackman another document.
A birth certificate.
Wasn't easy, because there was an error in her birth date. But I've located the only girl in this area registered with the name of Fleur. And guess who Mummy and Daddy are?
Jackman read out the names.
Simeon and Charlotte Mulberry. Of Alderfield House, Herne Point. My God. She's their sister. There were 7 Mulberry children.
He looked at Max.
Would you check for a death certificate?
I'm ahead of you there, boss. But there's nothing.
There's no official record of her death. Jackman stood up.
Okay, Max. You've done some totally brilliant work today. Well done.
He beckoned to Marie.
Prepare yourself, Sergeant. It's time to pay a visit to Mr. Benedict Mulberry.
Chapter 32.
Sir, we know about you and your family's tragic past. Your real family, that is. I have no problem with the fact that you chose not to tell us. You all have new lives with new identities. But now, I'm afraid, the circumstances have changed.
Your family history is an integral part of this murder inquiry. Jackman paused.
Are you Benedict Mulberry, eldest son of the late Simeon and Charlotte Mulberry of Alderfield House, Herne Point, Harlan Marsh?
Marie watched him closely. Benedict's face remained impassive until Jackman mentioned his father by name. She saw a nerve jump beneath his right eye. There followed a long silence. Marie wondered what thoughts were going through Benedict's mind. His memories must be the stuff of nightmares. Finally, he spoke, and his voice was steady.
Yes, I was Benedict Mulberry.
But I'd appreciate your being so kind as to continue to refer to me as Benedict Broom.
Jackman nodded.
I can do that. You know about the others? Asked Benedict.
Yes, sir, said Jackman.
But we felt it only right to discuss it with you first.
That's good. That's good.
Benedict sounded infinitely weary. He seemed to have aged since they entered the room.
You can talk to Philip and probably Asher about this. Tell them what you know about us, and I have said it's all right to be honest. They will understand that we have no choice. But if there is any way you can avoid it, please don't confront Micah or our sister, not yet. Elizabeth couldn't cope, and Micah, well, Micah is volatile, as I'm sure you already realize.
They nodded.
And Toby, although he may appear to be tough as old boots, he's as fragile as a butterfly. I would ask you to be especially compassionate when you talk to Toby, Inspector. He may look like a sturdy farmer, but beneath that weathered skin he is still a frightened child.
Jackman gave Marie a swift look. He had no choice but to tell Benedict what had happened to his brother.
Benedict, I'm afraid I have some bad news.
A man's body was found today, out at the old mill close to your old home at Alderfield. I'm very sorry, but we have reason to believe that the man is your brother, Toby.
Benedict closed his eyes and clasped his hands together as if in prayer. His voice was soft.
Oh, no. Poor Toby. I always thought he would be the first to go. Unless, of course, Micah lost his temper once too often and got himself killed in a fight.
He sighed.
Can I see him?
Not just yet, sir, said Jackman. I'm sure you'll appreciate that there are procedures to follow, and he will need to be formally identified.
How did he kill himself? A shotgun, I suppose. He had two at the farm.
He hanged himself.
Oh, I'd have thought he would have used the gun.
Like his father did, thought Marie.
I'm glad he chose the mill, said Benedict. It was our quiet place. Somewhere we went when things got bad. If I were going to kill myself, I'd go to the mill too.
I'm afraid it was Asher who found him. We wondered how he knew where to go.
Benedict sighed again.
Poor child.
Marie thought of the man who slipped away from his pretty fiancée and into the arms of a prostitute.
What happened to Fleur?
Jackman's question took even Marie by surprise. Benedict just sat white-faced and said,
She died. She got sick and died. Why on earth do you want to know about Fleur?
Because we found her body in the chamber below Windrush.
What? Our father told us she had been cremated.
Benedict Broom pushed back his chair and stared at them.
Fleur was one of the 13 young women found there, Benedict, said Jackman.
Benedict put his hands to his mouth.
That's impossible.
I think you should tell us about Windrush.
Jackman was unrelenting.
It really wasn't going to be some swanky retreat, was it?
Oh, but it was, although not for everyone. It was for us.
Benedict's voice was low and husky.
Our retreat. Our home. Somewhere we could be together again, where we belonged.
And the bodies? All those dead girls, Benedict? Where did they fit in?
I know nothing about them, I swear.
Your brother Philip has been arrested for their murder. Did he forget to mention what he was up to beneath your precious retreat?
Philip,
Oh, come now. Forgive me, but you are very wrong there.
Benedict began to laugh.
D.I. Jackman, Philip is the gentlest man I've ever known.
He has confessed.
Benedict shook his head.
I think you need to speak to him again.
I can't tell you why he's done such a stupid thing, but believe me, Philip is not your killer.
We're going to have to move our suspects to different stations now we know they're related.
Jackman rubbed at an aching shoulder.
But from past experience, and knowing what we know unofficially, I'm loath to let them out of my sight for 5 minutes.
He frowned.
We will have to let Asher go. We have nothing to hold him on now we know he had the key to Toby Tanner's place, legitimately.
He and Marie were waiting for Philip Groves to be brought to an interview room. Marie kept her voice low.
No one other than the team and the professor knows anything yet. Let's hang fire until we've spoken to Philip again.
Ah, good, I'm in time. Professor O'Byrne hurried towards them along the corridor.
May I still sit in? We have permission from Mr. Groves, I mean, Mulberry.
Jackman lifted a finger to his lips.
It's Groves, okay? And yes, we'd be grateful for your opinion. I'll just ask that you keep quiet and observe, that's all.
Philip Groves, Marie still found it hard to think of him as Mulberry, sat across the table from them. He looked hollow, as if all the life had been drained out of him. Jackman told him what they knew of his past and about his brother Toby's death. Finally, he said,
You are right. I didn't kill the girls. I found their bodies and took them to a place of safety.
His voice was soft, gentle, and terribly tired.
That's all I ever did. I took them from a world of hurt, where people didn't treat them right. I looked after them.
They had families, Philip. People who loved and missed them.
Marie spoke softly.
No, they didn't, Sergeant.
He spoke calmly.
If they had cared so much, their children would not have run away, or been left so vulnerable that some man could take them, defile them, and kill them. I was their real family. I loved them. And in the end, I was all they needed.
How did you find them, Philip?
Jackman asked.
You don't just find dead bodies.
Whoever killed them left them in the old ruin on the marsh, in the small cellar room that leads to my tunnel.
Who was it? You must have seen him leave the bodies. And he must have known what you were doing, mustn't he? He dumps a dead body. Then when he returns a few months later with the next one, lo and behold, it's gone.
Philip shook his head.
I never saw him, and I have no idea what he thought about the girls disappearing, if indeed he even realized. You saw that derelict building, Sergeant? As far as I could tell, he just opened the door and pushed them through into the darkness.
I'm sorry, Philip, but I suggest that you did know who it was. You may not have seen him, but from the things he did to those girls, you knew.
Philip stared down at the table.
Come on. You're an educated man, Philip. You and your brothers and sisters suffered terrible, terrible hurt at the hands of your parents. You knew that one of your brothers was so damaged that he had the capacity to kill, didn't you?
You were just cleaning up after him, weren't you? Protecting him, like you and Benedict have always done,
Marie added.
I didn't know who killed my lovely girls, and I didn't want to know. I simply took them home and gave them back their dignity.
And is that what you did to Fleur? You took her home.
Philip's eyes flew wide open, and his head came up sharply. After a moment he said,
I saw him. I saw our father digging the hole in the family graveyard. He was digging it where we used to bury the animals.
You saw him bury your sister?
Groves nodded.
As soon as he had finished filling the grave, I promised Fleur that I would take her home one day. I told her that she'd sleep in soft sheets
in a proper bed, with sweet-smelling flowers at her side. She would never spend another night on the cold floor of a stinking cage.
Jackman glanced at Marie. She was forcing back tears. "Why would you dig up a body?" Gary had asked. Now he knew.
"And you did go back for her, when you knew that Alderfield was about to be bulldozed?"
"I went back as soon as Benedict acquired Windrush. I was going to do it earlier, but I had nowhere to take her that was safe and permanent."
"You did it alone?"
Philip mumbled.
"Yes, alone. I never told the others about her grave."
"Why not? You were all so close. Surely they would have understood," said Marie.
"I couldn't add to their distress. How could I give them even more heartbreak to bear? They had been told she was ill and had died. That was enough, especially for the little ones. Only I knew that she had died at our father's hand. It was one burden I had to carry alone."
Philip looked at Marie.
"We have secrets, Sergeant. Each one of us is troubled. We are different from other people and always will be. That is why we needed to have a place of our own. A place where no matter what we did, we would not be judged. The world would be safe from us, and we would be safe from a world that could never understand what our parents had turned us into. Windrush was to be that sanctuary."
There were things Jackman did not understand. "But Philip, you went through university. You're a veterinary surgeon. That takes a lot of doing, many years of study. You're a professional, intelligent, full of compassion, and..." He ran out of words.
"I'm not an evil man, Inspector. But I grew up in a house of evil. I'm a freak."
"If you didn't kill those girls, what about the name tags over the beds? How did you know their names and their dates of birth? How did you know they were all born on a Wednesday?"
Marie spoke so coldly that even Jackman was taken aback. Philip swallowed.
I'll fill in the gaps, shall I?"
Marie leaned forward.
"You are the mender, aren't you? You are the healer. You know everything there is to know about your brothers. You knew exactly which one of them had lost control, and you knew why. But this time you couldn't fix him. As he grew up, he became more and more dangerous, didn't he?"
Marie's eyes bored into Philip's.
"And he was fixated by girls, little ones and older ones, as long as they were born on a Wednesday. Like him and his sister, Fleur."
Jackman looked at her with astonishment.
"Toby killed them, didn't he? He wasn't fragile, as Benedict would have us believe. He was psychotic, and an incredibly dangerous predator."
Philip heaved a sigh, and Marie sensed relief in it.
"You have to understand that Toby suffered more than any of us, other than Fleur. I knew that he would never be able to integrate back into society. Benedict and I worked ceaselessly to keep him out of harm's way. Micah lived at the farm in order to watch out for him. But we needed to get him to Windrush, and we were almost there."
He looked at Marie, tears in his eyes.
"Now he's dead, and it's the answer to a prayer. I'd like to believe that he is up in heaven, singing for his Maker, but I doubt that very much. You asked me before if I sing, and I do. We all could. But Toby had a voice that would make angels weep. Sadly, that was the only beautiful thing about Toby. I should have put him out of his misery years ago. After all, I have the knowledge and the wherewithal, but I couldn't bring myself to do it."
Marie thought about the flowers. She could believe that. Marie left to get Philip some water, and Jackman asked him about Asher and his perfect fiancée.
"Asher?"
He's not a bad boy, really. Somehow he managed to come out of our personal hell with a sort of mixed-up old-fashioned moral code, even if he does have a problem with sex. He adores his girlfriend and respects her wishes, but because of his obsession with sex, he regularly visits prostitutes.
And goes to sex clubs.
Philip shook his head. No, not Asher. The clubs were Toby's hunting ground.
Can you tell us anything about them, Philip?
Jackman asked. For the sake of recording, he added that D.S. Evans had just come back into the room.
Not really. Other than a few old locations. I tried to stop him, but he was too secretive. He would get a text or a call and disappear.
Philip sighed.
I just prayed that none of the girls he met were born on a Wednesday.
Jackman decided to bring the interview to a close. He told Philip that whatever he was charged with, it wouldn't be murder. Philip didn't seem to care. He was a husk, emptied out. As they stood up to leave, he said,
What will they do with my sister?
Fleur. When it's over, she will be buried properly. And with dignity.
That's good. And, Inspector, my other sister, Elizabeth, is she safe?
She's in a psychiatric hospital. Yes, she's safe.
She self-harms. That's her problem. But Benedict looks after her.
Of course, thought Marie. Those long sleeves pulled tightly down over her hands, that full-length skirt down to her ankles, even in the stifling heat of the hospital room. She should have known. Jackman had his finger on the recorder button.
Philip, how much do the others know? Especially Benedict.
Philip looked up.
About?
The children's ward. The abductions. The drugging of Wednesday's children. And what Toby did to them in that caravan out on the marsh.
Nothing, Inspector. They knew nothing. Ben's whole life was devoted to keeping Elizabeth safe and working on ways to finance the rebuilding of Windrush.
Philip gave a little shrug.
Although I'm sure he won't be surprised when you tell him what happened.
He let out a long sigh.
It would have been kinder to put us down when they found us, like a litter of kittens. They should have known that we would never survive in the world, especially when some of them began to suspect what might really have happened at Alderfield.
To your parents?
Jackman asked. Philip nodded. The police believe that you were responsible for both your parents' deaths, added Marie.
After what my father and my mother put us through, we were no longer responsible for anything.
Philip gave a humorless laugh.
But yes, they suspected as much. The problem was the police saw things that no one should. The horror of what they found in that house clouded their judgment. We were damaged then, detectives. And it was too late to do anything about it. They should have locked us away and allowed us to rot. Then 12 girls would not have had to die.
One small detail still bothered Marie.
Can I ask one last question, Philip? We never found any photographs of Toby, not at the farmhouse or anywhere. Why was that?
Philip gave a small smile.
There were very few pictures ever taken of any of us, Sergeant. But Toby had strange eyes. They were so pale that in some lights he looked as if he had no pupils, and the camera always picked that up. He looked either blind or dead.
Dead eyes.
As Jackman and Marie walked away, from behind the locked door came the sound of the purest voice, singing a lullaby. This time it didn't turn their blood to ice. It melted their hearts with sadness.
Chapter 33
It's tonight. 10:30. Location to be advised.
Rosie snapped the phone shut.
We're on.
Rosie and Max slipped out of their car and moved away into the darkness of the tree-lined lane. As she watched them go, Marie felt a surge of emotion. Two of their own were walking into a very dangerous situation, but another woman she cared about might finally be about to get some justice. Jackman was fastening his stab-proof vest.
Ready?
Everyone is in position.
You seem much more relaxed about this now, Marie.
I'm fine. Sometimes you need to take extreme measures, especially when you're dealing with someone who thinks they're above the law. If Rosie and Max are up for this, then so am I.
Me too.
Jackman moved away from their vehicle and towards the ramshackle collection of huts and outbuildings that were scattered around the old grain store. Marie came up beside him.
Max has produced some very tasty spyware for this operation, she whispered.
That lattice left nothing to chance. Those designer glasses have a camera embedded in one of the arms, and everything he sees is relayed to the lads in the van. They have an HD digital video recorder, and everything is being backed up, along with anything we hear on Rosie's wire.
Well, we've sent in the bait. We just have to hope that the big fish will swim in the pool tonight.
The grain store had been abandoned years before, and Rosie guessed that it had been chosen because there were no neighbours for miles around. She smiled lasciviously at the man on the door and whispered,
"I said I'd be back, didn't I?"
He nodded and openly stared at her cleavage.
"Hope you don't mind. I brought my boyfriend."
She nodded at Max, who was staring with apparent disinterest at the weird surroundings.
"It seems to me you get more fun here if you have someone to play with."
"You should have come and found me, sweetie."
He ran a finger down her bare arm.
"We could have had some fun."
"You are far too busy, handsome."
She leaned closer to the doorman and whispered,
"Should I leave him behind next time? What do you think?"
"I think that's a really good idea, babe."
"Petra,"
she said.
"Nice name. I'm Lenny."
"I'll remember that."
Rosie blew him a kiss, draping her arm over Max's shoulder. After half an hour of drinking and trance music, the partygoers were beginning to loosen up. Max had found what he decided was the optimum spot for people watching, especially the older men that were collecting in the shadows.
"Sorry, detective, but we need to either dance or snog, unless you want people to notice."
Rosie put her arm around his waist and pulled him towards her.
"You choose."
"No offense, Flower, but dancing will give me more chance to see who's coming and going through that back door."
"None taken. Groove away."
"Shit. Was it like this last time?"
asked Max, watching a couple of kids who looked about 12 getting busy on a wooden bench.
"You've seen nothing yet, Maxie boy."
Rosie took a sip from her can of lager.
"Just like I've seen nothing of our bloody target."
"Maybe he won't show. He knows Toby Tanner is dead, and that he was linked to the parties."
Rosie leaned over his shoulder.
"No, he'll be relieved that Tanner's out of the picture. Harlan Marsh is under his thumb, and he thinks we are far too busy tidying up Windrush to worry about anything else."
Rosie moved to the thumping beat.
"He won't be able to stay away from his dirty little enterprise."
Another 20 minutes went by, and Rosie began to wonder what they could do that wouldn't be the talk of the messroom for the next 5 years.
"Jackpot."
Max moved closer to her, turning her slightly, as if in an embrace. Two men were standing just inside the back door.
"Cade," muttered Max. "I'm banging my sights. Hope you're seeing this, guys."
Rosie wound herself around to Max's side. She recognized him immediately. The greased back hair and the glasses were no disguise at all.
"All we need now is to get something on him that he can't wriggle out of."
The music pulsed and the ravers gyrated around them.
"Rosie, watch him."
Rosie leant down, ostensibly to pick up a can from the floor. She knelt for a moment, her eyes trained on Cade, seeing him take a roll of notes from the other man and push them into his pocket. Rosie saw Cade beckon to a dancing team.